to a new episode of The Brand Called You. Today, I have not one, but three guests and three young millennials who are doing some amazing work in the social sector. Manik Gohil, Sanchit Govil, and Alvin Jones, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Ashutosh.
You are founders of a company called Lalten, and Lalten really comes from the Hindi word lantern. Bringing light into the lives of artisans. You're winners of the Forbes 30 Under 30, and you had dozens of awards and innumerable recognitions. What made the three of you come together?
The idea was started from a hostel room, actually, around January 2014. I went to a village where my hometown was there, and I was not doing anything good. So my mother pulled me out of the bed, and she took me to a self-help group where she was working. I saw 56 women which were making beautiful handmade paper diaries, and they were selling it at close to 15 to 20 rupees per piece. I've seen those diaries in Fab India's Pepper Fries at 200 to 50 rupees. I immediately came back to Mumbai where my hostel was there, and Sanchit, my other co-founder, was my batchmate. And I discussed it with him, and we were immediately intrigued about solving this issue, because we realized that the potential was huge. This was the artisan sector in India was the largest employment sector after agriculture, with 9.1 million artisans. And the global demand was again huge. So that's how we both met and started this. Alvin again then joined. Alvin is my school junior. And I and Sanchit know each other since last 12 years now. So we are graduates from 7 to 11 from Delhi College of Engineering. Did work for 2 years and then worked for MBA. And then post MBA also, we were not able to convince our parents that we wanted to do Lalten full time, though we started Lalten in our college. So that then we joined Flipkart, and we didn't tell our parents and moved out of Flipkart to pursue this full time again. And that's when Alvin joined the bandwagon.
Hopefully one day when I see you people as billionaires like you know, Bill Gates or someone, you can say you were Flipkart dropouts.
Yes,
I think that's one way to say it.
Yes, definitely. And Flipkart, the culture in Flipkart was amazing, actually. My directors, my peer group, everyone were much more enthusiastic about the entrepreneurship. They encouraged, they knew about Lalten up there.
Wonderful. Any thoughts from the two of you on how you got together? Or
so for me, social entrepreneurship in general was something which I was interested in since college days. So I after my college, I did my graduation from IIT Madras in materials, and then I joined this startup called Avanti, which is in education in the social enterprise. And after that, once I was working there, I talked to Manit about Lalten, and I was very intrigued, and I wanted to do something of my own. And when the opportunity presented itself, so I talked to Manit and Sanchit, and then took the leap.
And then the three of you came together.
Yes.
So for me, the biggest inspiration was my father, in a way, because he is a businessman who's based out of Aligarh and my hometown. And he is involved into a lot of social development activities and community work in the city. Right. So that's something where, you know, Lalten was something which actually gave us more business wings as well as social entrepreneurship wings to do something for the society.
Wow. That's amazing. So, you know, after you founded Lalten in college and then you went to Flipkart and then you came on board, how has your journey been? Tell me a little bit about your learnings, your challenges as you've been scaling up.
Sure. So I'm a Gujarati, and my father is a first engineer in the family, and I'm the second engineer. Otherwise, the entire family is into business. Okay, similar to Sanchit as well, where his family belonged to a business family. Our journey started from the hostel room, wherein we wanted to take up Lalten. We never envisioned that we would need funds or would have to raise investments also to grow.
Tell me, how did you decide on the name Lalten?
Lalten came up because we traveled across 22 states meeting artisans which were making beautiful craft products. And as we were meeting them, we found out that the common thing which was across all these villages in all these 22 states was a lantern.
Okay.
And we wanted to be a brand for the artisans first, rather than a brand for the buyers, and rather than keeping as a complicated English name, which the artisans would never able to pronounce or understand. I think that's the reason we came. We became a brand for the artisans
first. What an innovative name! That's amazing, amazing. You know, and then you speak about, when I was reading about you, you speak about skilling, design, intervention, innovative fiber. You speak about artisans in every village. How do you decide on which handicrafts to select?
Sure. So basically, when we were traveling initially during our initial years, so at that point of time, we focused a lot on the type of crafts which are much more popular. So that we never thought of that. It's more of it will more be on the impact side. But we thought that keeping the business perspective in mind, we need to travel and to take care of the crafts which are currently going on in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we started establishing our links in the clusters. So the first thing that we did when actually Chand sir came on board and he became a mentor is to select an individual or an artisan himself in the cluster who would be called as a cluster champion or a micro entrepreneur who belongs to the same community and who can actually help us in actually establishing ourselves in the clusters in terms of how we have to operationalize ourselves,
mm-hmm.
how we have to implement new designs of products in the clusters, and how we have to skill the artisans as well in terms of design and technology, which will come in the later part of the year.
So talk to me about some of the products that you currently handle.
So we do, we have four major product categories that we do today. So we are into apparels and fabrics. We do a lot of natural fiber products. So natural fiber is like cane, bamboo, then water hyacinth,
mm-hmm.
all these natural grasses which happens in different parts of India. Then we are into a lot of wooden products. So we design a lot of small decor and wooden lamps and lightings. And we also do a small portion of handmade paper products.
I see. And you do this across multiple states. Because I was reading, you know, you've got 1,200 artisans working in 8 states with 6,000 livelihoods. That is quite an incredible spread.
Yes. So more from a social angle, it is also a business opportunity, and which is untapped in India yet. Primarily all these big retailers, small and medium enterprises globally have been sourcing their products from Vietnam, Thailand, Latin American countries, or even African countries. But unlike India, wherein we had a huge population of artisans, I think our DNA was established with the help of our passion, as well as with the help of a lot of mentors also, like Mr. Chand, who mentored us for almost 18 months. He gave us targets to be achieved when we were running this from our apartment in Bangalore for almost 2 years, all bootstrapped.
Mm.
And before identifying that we can scale this business and take a new leap with an investment.
Amazing. So, you know, you have spoken about Chand a little bit. What has been the role of a mentor like him in your lives and in your business?
So as entrepreneurs, we have limited experience. What we have is passion, determination to achieve solutions to problems which we have identified. With this journey, when we meet mentors, and we have been fortunate to have a good set of mentors, pool of mentors from our own alumni backgrounds, as well as the other networks which we have, they bring a set of their own expertise. So we have a mentor who is a retail mogul in India, and he leads a retail brand in India. He helps in establishing the right sense from demand side.
Mm-hmm.
Chand sir, with the help of his ITC's network, help us with establishing a strong key vendor system, as well mm-hmm. as a key account system also.
Okay.
So that has eventually helped us a lot, and we have kept on growing, learning over the course of last 4 years of our journey.
And what about technology? What kind of technology are you using to manage such a large number of SKUs across so many states?
I'll ask Albert to take
it. We are developing a CRM tool for the artisans,
mm-hmm.
which is through a handheld mobile phone,
mm-hmm.
Which can help these artisans to manage their inventory in real time, as well as the order management happens, where the inquiries which are coming in are dealt through the CRM itself. And the front-facing part of this is the marketplace that you can see as Larten.com.
So just for my understanding, you know, the handheld devices you are giving, most of them do they already have smartphones, or is this something with which you are empowering them even more now?
So Ashutosh, the spread is basically around 40% of the artisans that we work with have access to smartphones already and basic internet, affordable internet. So with them, it is all about just skilling them in such a way that they are not overwhelmed by the new technology that is coming in. For them, technology is limited to simple and easy to use products like WhatsApp and worst case, YouTube and Facebook, best case. So in that way, I mean, we are trying to bring in the product as simple as possible for the artisans to understand and use it. So in that way, they are easily able to adapt to the platform.
Quite amazing. And you know, you're giving such, you're empowering them. There must be a lot of children in their families who must be using these devices in many different ways.
Yes.
And that's a real fun, because the, a lot of artisans are not educated as well. They're not literate. Mm-hmm. But smartphones comes for around $80 to $100 with accessibility of smart applications in it. And internet is the cheapest across the globe in India. And even though villages, we have been to, many of them do not have electricity for 24 hours a day, but people have access to smartphones and internet. The kids know what PUBG is, what TikTok is, and what WhatsApp is. And that's what is bringing in scalability in this sector, which was undue and which was not there, which was due and which was not there across the last few decades.
To add to that, I would like to say an anecdote which we, which I just came to see a few days back. When we were visiting a cluster a few days back with a client, so we had this old artisan who has been working with us since many years, right? So his son is looking after the business now. And when the client asked him to show the products, he opened his Instagram profile and showed the products. That was amazing for the client as well. He was also, you know, surprised to see how it is shaping up.
Because I think, other than just selling, you know, when I was reading about you, other than just empowering people to get their products into the market, you're probably just changing lifestyles for so many people in so many villages. I mean, you know, that's quite amazing.
Yes, definitely.
So, you know, as you were scaling up Laltech across 8 different states, and I'm sure you have plans to go to many more states, what have been some of your challenges and what have been your learnings?
So as we have, so actually all these states, they have been built on a gradual basis. And so when we travel to different states, so in India, as you already know, that the language and the demographic, it changes as you travel like 10 kilometers apart, right? So that's something which was an initial challenge, definitely, where we are traveling to different clusters. We are talking to different set of artisans who understand different languages. They come from a different background, and making them understand that this is something which will help them scale their business was definitely a challenge initially. Going forward, as we scaled the business, we started facing challenge in terms of how we can increase our supply. So we know that these are the 2 or 3 states where we can get a good amount of business, where we can actually give them good amount of orders. But in terms of setting up processes, that how we can ensure that there has to be a quality check, there has to be a quantity check that has to happen, the quantity has to scale up from a particular cluster or a particular village, that became a challenge. But I think that's something where we are also in a learning phase, where we are establishing few takeaways everywhere and then moving forward. We don't want to grow aggressively and then realize that we have done some mistakes or so something which could we could have improved on.
That's a very sensible way to do it.
And so we are taking that leap cluster and state by state level, where we are establishing certain processes, learning from them, and then moving forward to apply it to a different state or a cluster.
So 2 questions relating to supplies. You know, one is, once you have determined what design you want and what products you want, in a classical sense, you said, you know, set the production line going. In your case, you tell the artisans, I want 50 pieces of this. And then you're making a commitment further on to say, I will deliver 50 pieces. So the first question is, how do you manage the commitment does your supplier ensure the commitment is met? And number two, it's coming from all kinds of areas. How do you manage the supply chain to make sure that goods reach you in the condition that, that you've been promised?
I think a key backbone of supply chain is our cluster champions, our micro entrepreneurs. The micro entrepreneurs are youths of 25 to 35 years of age. They are basically Larton employees on contracts as well, who are villagers living in a small village. Mm-hmm. So they are skilled in terms of creating uniform quality products in good quantities. Mm-hmm. And it's everything is though looks unorganized, but it's been organized on a smaller level with the help of a micro entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. So his house becomes a warehouse when the goods are being dispatched. And he also gets a commission of 2-5% as part of our business model, which is his skin in the game so that he ensures that the products are of good quality. Mm. Moreover, he's the one who's also skilled in terms of technology and leveraging technology as simple as WhatsApp to communicate with our teams and now mobile CRMs also. Mm. So though this entire unorganized sector is being organized with our micro entrepreneur, and everything is data led. So we have data inputs of how many artisans the micro entrepreneur is working with, what is the utilization, mm-hmm. and depending on what is the capacity which the cluster can deliver, and accordingly then we fetch a demand for it actually. Mm-hmm. And it's always make to order, so mm-hmm. we are not
you're not carrying stocks of your own.
Yeah, so we are zero inventory company.
Okay.
And what we are doing is with the help of our micro entrepreneurs and technology, we are basically leveraging both of it to connect the demand for handmade products by global SMEs and big brands like Zara, Fab mm-hmm. India, to all of these unorganized artisans across the country.
Amazing. Wonderful. I mean, you're actually giving the artisans a voice, and you know, I'm sure you've collected a lot of data which says that lives of those people who are working with you has actually improved. Would that be a correct statement?
Yes, definitely. So the lives do not improve the first day actually. If you give them a couple of orders, the lives improves when you make sure that the orders are consistent. While we were in our apartment, we reached out to 22 states. We had a network of almost more than 9,000 artisans with us, with their addresses and with their phone numbers, contact details and everything from where we can potentially source. Mm. But as we had good mentors, as we grew, they cut down all of our artisans to a bandwidth of 700 artisans, almost by 10%. Mm. Because the idea was not to give them an order in the month of January and then go back and give them an order in the month of August.
Right.
But the idea is to give them orders every single day of the year.
Mm.
And if we can do that, that eventually builds up a strong ecosystem mm. and an impact mm. with that in that community, which Larton does. So. And it becomes a popular as a brand name for the artisans up there.
Mm.
That and that's the resilience, and that's the that is stickiness basically they would have
true.
To
and,
us.
And I guess you know, Larton is a brand that becomes aspirational for those artisans who are not yet supplying to you.
Yes,
exactly.
And improvement in health, education for their kids.
Yeah.
Because if a person, if an artisan can earn every single day of the year, then he can ensure that he can pay fees to his schools. Kids' school, and if he is getting sustainable income not throughout the year, then mm-hmm. he is unsure of the education which his kids can lead to.
Okay. To add to that, so just how we see it in a family, in one of the artisan families, so we would want, the way that we see it, we want to grow is that the eldest son actually who's gone to a nearby town for a petty job, he comes back to the village and joins his father into the traditional legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And the youngest son or the youngest daughter, the youngest child of the family
mm.
should go to school.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's how we see the impact,
very, very
the kind
nice.
Of impact that we want.
Very, very interesting. So there's one more question or two more questions on Larton before I move to another segment. For all the Larton families, how do you see empowerment of girls? That's a very serious problem we have in our villages. Are the girls in families which are now, as you said, sending children to school, do you see a difference in the way they are treated?
So one thing which we have seen from the artisans that we have is around 70% of them are women who work on the products that are given
mm.
as an order. So what happens in this scenario is that when a woman starts owning in a family,
mm.
That is the first step towards empowerment,
correct.
Right? We feel.
Correct.
So when and most of these times these are agricultural households where women do not have any other where the family does not have
any other income
other than the women who are working in off seasons when the men in the family are involved in farming. So that is in one way starting to improve the lives of women as well in the family.
I mean, I'm so impressed with the kind of work you people are doing. But let's now move to the other part of our program, which is to get some knowledge from you for all thousands of people who watch as startup entrepreneurs.
Right.
You've been at this for a few years. What do you think are some of the mistakes startup entrepreneurs make?
I think there's a lot of mistakes which we did actually for sure.
So share your learnings.
Yeah, I think I'll tell you year wise as well. So in the first couple of years when we were growing this company, we were in an apartment. So and that was our office. That was our place where we used to live. The scope of error and the scope of making mistakes were limited up there. But as we started growing the company with a bandwidth of employees which we have today, I think we used to run the company with our passion and diligent determination to tackle this sector and then be the first one to scale it up. But I think it's not us which runs the company, it's the employees also which runs the company. And being first-time entrepreneurs, one of the biggest mistakes which we did or with the learnings which we would be having now is to hire right source of employees as well. And so as soon as we were growing the company, I think talent acquisition is a very important thing which we have to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the initial days, we had a lot of young talent. They were passionate, they were amazing, but then they lacked professionalism as well as certain other skill sets which are required either department wise. I think that was one learning which I would have. Then managing finances.
Yeah, that's so. Neither of us actually comes from a finance or a particular tech background, right? And to establish that in the initial years, to have the right processes, how do we have to manage our finances? That actually we obviously did some mistakes where we learned in that process that how we can actually better that process, where we know that the 1 rupee that we are spending and how much money we are generating from that 1 rupee.
Mm-hmm.
That's something which we have realized over the couple of years.
Right.
Yeah. Like we have been part of certain accelerators and incubations as well in India, in US and in Europe also. But it's a curriculum based program wherein they teach that these are the problems which an entrepreneur will face in finance and how you can tackle it. But even despite of doing all of it, I think unless you make a mistake, you would never be able to learn it.
Absolutely.
So I think that's where I think we are much more empowered today to grow Lalten as what we were 2 years ago, actually.
One thing which I have learned is in the initial stages of the startup, we do not realize what is our limit. So many a times we have made these mistakes where we have overcommitted and under-delivered. So that is the biggest mistake that you can make. Go out there.
So better to undercommit and overdeliver.
Exactly.
Is what you're saying.
Exactly.
So another question that I ask a lot of people who come here and who are startups like all of you, your three partners, co-founders, some people say that the entrepreneur should do it solo. Some people say we should have co-founders. You are co-founders. What strengths do you bring to one another and to your company?
Sure. So I think we're very fortunate to have three co-founders in the company. And as we were growing, we were doing similar things actually. So in the first 3 years, what I was doing, the similar was Alvin was also doing, and we didn't have any of our areas divided. But over the times as we have grown, I think we also understood our strengths. And that's where we divide our lines and we support each other if the other person needs help in. And that sort of understanding is very important. I often say to my wife as well that, so I've been married over the last 1.5 years now, and I spend more time with Alvin and Sanchit than I spend with my wife, actually. And being in being as founders, it's a lonely journey actually, because you need to have a lot of scopes and horizon with your employees and with your investors and the prospects of how you can grow and the demand side as well with your buyers. So, and with all of this, you go through a lot of emotional and mental and a lot of other physical inputs which we put in the company. So I think it has been a journey which a solo founder, it would have been a very tough for any one of us, I would say. And with as we are growing, we're also learning and helping each other to complement our skills and learn new skills also.
And it really helps the team also going forward, because once we have aligned the responsibilities, so we know that how we want to, each one of us actually wants to take the team forward, which direction we want to go, right? So that's something which needs to be aligned. That's something which we have done for ourselves now.
And how do you handle differences between the three of you?
The good part is that we don't have differences on basis of our egos, and we are more pragmatic and passionate for the company. So we understand that if there are differences or there are points which are not in sync with us, I think we take to a logical conclusion and we take it.
So it is also good that you have co-founders, because you get multiple facets to and perspectives to your own piece as well. So so one good thing is that we all respect each other's responsibilities, right? And we know that we have to take that final call. But then we get, say for example, if in technology, I would take their inputs as well on how to go forward, and that gives me a fresh perspective, which I might not have thought about. And that is a great boon.
It's very nice.
Yeah.
It's very nice. Very nice.
Hats off to people who are doing it alone.
I agree. I agree. You know, so when I founded Guardian Pharmacy, I was alone. And I know the kind of challenges I went through, you know, when at peak Guardian had 1200 people working. But it was a very, very lonely job. And I've always been a great believer in having a co-founder. But, you know, some people tell me that it's, you should be solo. And I said, I was solo. It was very difficult. I agree with you. Well done. So let's move on. you know, you're still very young, but you're making quite a name for yourselves. When you get so much, so many awards and so much recognition, it must be a challenge to keep your feet on the ground.
I'm not really sure about it actually. So I think a lot of recognition has eventually helped us to get a lot of demand, because it makes a company's name gets visible. I remember that as soon as our Forbes thing came and it was public, then a lot of people recognized us that there's some company like this which is doing a great job with the artisans. And a lot of big buyers across the domestic and international market reached out to us. We had buyers flowing down for over the next 1 to 2 months after it to place orders with us. They were eager to, and I think that way we have encapsulated all of it. In terms of I think we ourselves come from a very humble background actually. So I think we cherish that whatever we have, maybe recognitions, we have earned it. And I think there's much to do actually, because we're just scratching the surface right now. I think it's, we want to take up the sector, bring it to scalability, to the next $1 billion company, because we feel that it is a $1 billion market up there, with $130 billion as the global market demand. And India is just giving $8 billion of it, wherein we have 9.1 million artisans. I think it's huge. And out there, a lot of global buyers like IKEA, Walmart, JCPenney, all of them are looking for artisan-led products now, sustainable products also. So why not India, actually?
So a few more questions. you know, it's a question I ask all my guests. We all fail and we all have learnings. You know, and then you did mention that you had, in the early days, lots of challenges that you faced. What have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes? Let's not say failures.
So in my business, I think we have become much more diligent now in terms of not overcommitting and under-delivering. And it's about actually under-committing and over-delivering, managing the supply chain accordingly, managing the finances, talent acquisitions are some of my learnings which I have today from Lalit India.
And Anything that both of you have to say?
Yeah, I think so. We have a common ground here where we have definitely done mistakes in terms of hiring, in terms of our finances, and that's something where we are now setting the foundation right, so that going forward, because we're now in a stage where yes, people actually, you know, do look up to us a lot in terms, yeah, whether it's a client or an investor or a mentor, and we have to make sure from ourselves that we are getting that foundation right. We are just, you know, rectifying all the mistakes that we have done and moving forward. And I think that's something which, you know, we should do.
One key learning that I have is a company is as strong as the processes that it has. So the processes when it started getting set up, so that helped us in getting more and more ready for scale. So the problems that we had when we had started to grow up in the initial stages started to get rectified once we started to set up processes for each and every different operations that we had. So that is one key learning that I have to share.
I think building up a strong culture is also something which is a good learning for us, because being first-time entrepreneurs, we tend to do a lot of mistakes in setting up a right culture with a lot of pressure with the demand and a lot of pressure with the supply as well when we're working on a supply-constrained sector right now. So I think that culture is something which definitely we would have to learn a lot, setting up a good culture.
So thank you very much. I think it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to all three of you. And I sincerely hope that sooner than later, I'm going to see Lalten in one of the unicorns, you know, to read about you. And I say, well, I spoke to them as well. So good luck to all of you and God bless you.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Ashutosh, for this. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.